everybody. Another episode of Tattoos, Code, and Data Flows. Really excited for my guest today, Dustin Lehr. He's an application security professional, years of experience based out of Colorado. He's got a lot of great things to say about, you know, different aspects of AppSec, and very excited to have him.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Dustin, very excited to have you on the podcast today. Hope things are going well. Just for the audience, why don't you give a little background on yourself, what you've been up to, what your career background, and you know how you ended up here on the podcast with me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt, for having me. So my name is Dustin Lehr. I actually, my background is mostly in software engineering. So studied computer science and then spent about 13 years actually as a software engineer slash application architect before I kind of took the plunge into security. Really had decided to be, you know, an individual contributor the rest of my career actually at the time, and got the opportunity to lead the application and application security team. At the time, it was my previous company. So I had to think about it for a while, but eventually decided, you know what, let's do it. Currently I'm director of application security for Fivetran, and security field is absolutely fascinating to me. A couple reasons I got into it, one of them being to fix it. So I was kind of on the other side as a software engineer, just looking at the security team like, what are you doing? You're not helping. You know, what's that going on? Why are you asking me to do this again? So that's a big part of it. And then I've always had a focus on quality in general, and I find security to be a great avenue to drive quality across an organization. So I would say that's one of the main reasons that I'm so passionate about it.
No, that's awesome. And I always say application security is a term that can be many things to many people. And just the way you interpret it, and I like your approach to, you know, quality, because there always is those intersecting, you know, quality and security are two separate things, but they interact together a lot of times. Like, is it a security bug, or is it a quality bug, or is it both?
Absolutely. Yeah. And as I got kind of deeper into software engineering and became an architect and stuff, that just became more of the conversation is the security piece. You know, the first step is to build functional software. But if you're thinking about things beyond that, you're thinking about maintainability and performance and security and building resilient architecture and kind of the full picture. And I think that's why I just naturally got into security. And for me, there's a bit of there was a rabbit hole, right, where you start learning about OWASP and all these security concepts. Yep. And if you're curious, you don't stop, right? You just keep going. Yeah, I remember reading like cheat sheet after cheat sheet on OWASP. I'm like, oh, cool. You know, just like really getting into it. So, yeah, anyway.
Awesome. Well, that's great background. So we're going to jump into it with our first section of Thinking Out Loud.
Thinking out loud. Maybe we found love right where we are.
So, Dustin, in your day-to-day activity as an application security executive, you know, what's keeping you up at night? As we mentioned kind of in the intro, that application security can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. You know, what is your focus on a day-to-day basis in today's rapid development in a modern DevOps CI/CD world?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's different levels of maturity, right, that each company has. And when you kind of walk in the door, you have to kind of recognize where you are and figure out where you want to go. I think in general, there's kind of this a major two-step process in my mind. One of them, the very first step being really understanding the environment in general. What's out there? What do you need to protect? And then what is the current state? You know, so doing things like putting tools in place and doing pen tests and really get an understanding of what you're looking at in terms of maturity. That's a big part of it. The other part of it in my mind is engagement. So now that you know what the environment is like, you're not going to fix everything, right? So you do have to engage the folks across the organization to motivate them, you know, figure out how to incentivize them to actually take action against those findings, which will ultimately lead to a better security state overall. So I would say that's one of the biggest things on my mind is how do we get people motivated? You know, how do we get them to to actually take action and fix the issues that are out there.
Yeah, and I actually I don't know if you've, some of the audience have probably seen some of the sessions I do called Bionic Uncensored, these Glassboard sessions. I'm using the Glassboard now. And I recently did one, you can check it out, called Why. And it's really like, you know, you're talking as an application security professional to a development team, and the concept of why is more applicable to why would somebody do that? You know, why would somebody put that character string into the query string? Why would somebody try and, you know, cause the application to crash with, a payload uploaded, something like that. So it's not just about a functional bug that is very kind of easy to understand in terms of a remediation. You always have to prove why. Why would somebody do that? Because they have unlimited time and resources when you only have a short window to actually introduce that new point release, full release, feature request, so on and so forth. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say so. And I think that's certainly one way to motivate people. I think a lot of people, you know, as they learn more, especially what the attackers can do, and mm-hmm. I find this to be a very effective method is, you know, to show somebody how their code specifically might have a weakness that could be exploited. You know, and that demonstration, I think, can be very motivating. We were just talking about motivation and engagement. I think that's certainly one way to motivate people, you know, kind of open their eyes when it comes to, you know, that code that you wrote, you know, I know you're proud of it, but it, here's how we could actually take advantage of it, you know, for malicious purposes. Yeah. And there's other ways to motivate people as well. You know, sometimes extrinsic rewards versus more intrinsic, I would say, demonstrating the finding like we were just talking about and exploitability is more intrinsic, right? It kind of motivates people from the inside. Oh, you know, now I'm more motivated to go fix that issue. But there's also extrinsic rewards too, like thinking about adding requirements to performance reviews, you know, definition of done, you know, you're not done with the issue or the feature that you just coded if it has any security findings, you know, that kind of yep. stuff can also motivate folks. And then healthy competition. frankly, I think it's culture specific, right? You can't maybe do hardcore competition between folks or teams, but I think, you know, some light maturity scores, et cetera, across teams, just to kind of show how teams are doing, can also be very motivating too, you know?
So. Very good. No, that's great information. And now it's your opportunity to really talk about, you know, what's bugging you today in our rant session.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now you're going to hear about it.
Dustin, what ticks you off today in the industry? Is it overuse of an acronym? Is it, you know, thinking a technology works in a way when it really doesn't? What kind of gets you all hot and bothered in the industry today?
Yeah, so there's been a move toward more of a partnership approach when it comes to security, especially AppSec working closely with engineering teams. I think what ticks me off is not everyone's gotten that message. And I also think, again, this is part of why I joined the industry, because what I've seen is a lot of folks back then and still taking kind of that ivory tower approach. You know, I'm going to sit here, I'm going to judge how you're doing in terms of security. I'm going to tell you everything you did wrong. I'm not going to encourage you. I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to teach you. Right. And yep. I think we've evolved past that, I think, in general. And I think I'd like to see a little more people, you know, catching up to where a lot of folks are today in terms of provide value, create that partnership, create that relationship with folks, be part of the team, you know, be in a position where people are inviting you in early to do architecture reviews, you know, threat modeling activities, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, because you've built that relationship and you've built that trust. So, yeah, I'd like to see more people move toward that.
No, I agree. And it's one of the things that I always said is like, you know, as security, it's not like you come in as the heavy or the police force. It's more like expending the olive branch of peace to the development staff and saying, here, I'm here to help you. I come bearing gifts. You know, I'm not here to, you know, everyone kind of cringes when they hear security or somebody from security is going to come in and they're all like ready to fight. Let's, you know, we're all in this to create functioning software that is secure. And, you know, contention really derails that objective of creating functional software that is secure.
Certainly. Yeah. I think it's productive though to not come in and agree on everything at once either, right?
Oh, agree. Yeah, 100%.
To have the push and pull from both sides, I think it's just a really healthy conversation. You know, engineering teams know things. The engineers know things that you don't know on the security side. You can't know all the details that they do, but yep. You know things from a security perspective. So it's really that combined force that is most valuable, I think.
Gotcha. So no, that's great. Now we're going to flip the tables and give you an opportunity to wave your magic wand with the Nirvana World section. So Nirvana World is, you know, you have a magic wand, you're Harry Potter, or you're, I don't know, whatever else magical creature you are. If you could fix anything in the industry, what would it be? It doesn't have to be like the relationship between development and AppSec. I mean, it could be anything you want. The sky's the limit in terms of the desire.
Yeah, I mean, I think providing more clarity to the engineering teams, the kind of the Nirvana concept that I have in my mind is, you know, could you provide like a single list of findings to your engineering organization that mm-hmm. combines everything you know on the security side into like one packaged deliverable? Right. So instead of, hey, here's a list of findings from this tool and here's another list and the other security team is going to send you something else for you to look at, putting all those pieces together and automating reports that, you know, make it very clear to the engineering team, here's the list. There's 10 findings. They're ordered by, you know, severity. Severity is calculated with context. You know, mm-hmm. where it's not just the basic CVSS score from the tool. It takes into account whether it's public facing or, you know, what, you know, the business criticality is, the data classification, right? All of that in one picture in this nice ordered prioritized list. And then the engineering teams, all they need to do, knowing all of that, is prioritize it, you know, and get it into their sprints so they can actually work it. I just see a lot of disorganization out there today, and I think we can do better as a security team to automate that. But imagine all the pieces that have to come together to make that happen, right? You need an asset inventory that works well to give you an idea of the full picture. You need to identify ownership. There's a lot of moving pieces there, and I think you know, once we figure that out, to me that's Nirvana. Mm-hmm. I think the other piece of Nirvana that I would want to share is, you know, imagine the day where your engineers care about security, you know, and they're, as part of their daily habits, thinking about security, fixing issues. You know, that's kind of the perfect harmony of security and engineering. I think we can get there. I think it's going to be challenging. You know, I think there's a lot in terms of education and stuff, you know, that there's gaps there. Like my education was, hey, there's one optional security class that you can take. You know, it's not built into the you know, kind of the blood of a lot of educational criteria these days. And I would certainly like to see that addressed as well.
Oh, very good. Yeah, those are, you know, great points across the board to kind of address a problem that has existed for years and how to actually, you know, take an approach to it. So appreciate that. We're going to move into the speed round now. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. All right. So the speed round, quick questions. It can be a longer response or based on kind of it. It could be a yes or no answer. It's up to you. But what's your take as an application security professional around the use of the term Agile? Everybody uses Agile. Every marketing material, white paper, Agile, Agile DevOps, we're very Agile. What's your take on the proper usage of the term Agile?
Yeah, I do think it's kind of a overused, bloated term at this point. People use interchangeably with maybe some other words as well that they should be using. But I think, especially as a software engineer and an architect, the Agile piece to me is, you know, still very relevant. Mm-hmm. It's figuring out how to build systems, you know, that are resilient, that are agile, that can be updated quickly. And it's also an approach to the process that I still think is very relevant. And that's, you know, you can't know everything you need to build up front. So you need to iterate, you know, and to create a process and you know, systems that are agile, to me, is building that flexibility, you know, to be able to update them quickly if you need to, and to even change your process if you need to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome. So next one's very passionate and interesting from your take as a practitioner in application security. The concept of shift left. Everyone's used it. We've been using it for years. We're in a different process than a waterfall development. What's your take on shift left? Is it still a thing? Is it shift everywhere? What do you take as you talk to development teams about shift left?
Yeah, I mean, I think shift left was a term that we needed at the time, right? Because there was a lot of focus on the right side of the SDLC. So shift left, right, is kind of shifting into focusing a little bit more on earlier SDLC best practices. I think we needed that. I think we needed to say, hey, you know what, if we want to prevent issues in production and ultimately reduce our time to fixing issues, we need to catch them sooner. So I think we needed it at the time, but I also think I think we're past it. And I think the way that I really like to define AppSec in a short version, if people are like, what is AppSec? What do you even do? I like to say that AppSec is building security into the SDLC. So to me, that's it's beyond shift left. It's actually having those good habits in every stage. And, you know, I don't know what we should call that, full, shift full, shift complete.
I like to say shift everywhere.
Shift everywhere. I've heard that too. Yeah.
Shift everywhere is what I like to use because, you know, I look at it as the entity that you're developing changes as it moves through that DevOps process. So it's like you need, you know, runtime information, you need build information, you need code information, all that tied together really gives you that complete landscape of risk.
Yeah. Now walking in the door a couple times here, the other term I would want to throw out there that I kind of made up is to start right. Okay. And the way that I like to talk about this is it's not the best idea to start with leftmost SDLC elements because you don't know how it's going to affect everything downstream. So I actually like to put controls and scans and tests in place more on the right side of the SDLC to start, which really helps you create a baseline as well. Mm-hmm. Like how many issues are reaching production? Like how, you know, what is our opportunity to improve? And then as you start adding elements to the left side, you can see how those right side results are affected.
Oh, makes sense. I like to, you know, shift everywhere. And I like to say remediate left. You know, remediation is done on the left and really identification is done everywhere. So it's shift everywhere for identification. Remediation is shift left. Because that's, you know, the beginning of the process, the people writing the code.
Absolutely. It's the cheapest to fix on the left. So yeah,
absolutely. So another question and theory I have is, you know, application security. Do you think as an industry, we're selling ourselves short that it should be software security? Because what is the definition of an app? Is an app like, you know, a calculator app on your phone, but you're talking about big complex systems for healthcare and e-commerce. And, you know, I like to say, you know, code is everywhere. I mean, everything is code. So do you think application security is selling the industry as a whole short, or do you like the term?
I actually do. I prefer software security. So
I do as well. I do as well.
Yeah, but I also like the short term of AppSec versus SoftSec. Yeah. Like to me, that doesn't really have the same punch. So
yeah, the terms are always about having a cool acronym associated with
them. Yeah, and I think AppSec's kind of cool. So I don't know that that's going away anytime soon.
Now I'm very conflicted. I do agree with you. I like software security because it's bigger, but I hate the acronym. So we got to work on that.
Yeah.
Last question. You know, you do a lot of things. I've seen a lot of your information on LinkedIn and you're touching on, who do you look up to in the industry? Because I'm all about educating people on different paths or different people that are saying interesting things. Who do you think is a good kind of speaker and person to follow in the industry of application security or cybersecurity as a whole for that matter?
Yeah, I have some thoughts here. Besides Krebs, of course, that everybody checks in daily with, I'm sure. I think Chris Romeo is doing a lot of great stuff with his podcast, Application Security Podcast. A lot of new, fresh ideas, especially focused on culture and security champions and that sort of stuff. there's a lot of stuff that I actually like to attend locally. There's a group, Colorado Equals Security, that I think is doing great things in terms of building community around security, you know, dinners and events and all that kind of stuff. And then I actually got way deep into what we call motivational design or gamification, because if we're going to talk about engagement and how to motivate people and how to get them excited about security, there's a specific individual that I do follow. His name is Yukai Chow. He built a framework called Octalysis, and I've just learned a ton when it comes to motivational design and psychology and all that stuff. And I think, you know, it's just a great complement to what we do as security folks.
That's great. Those are some new names for the audience that have listened to the podcast before. You know, we've had some repeat people follow, but those are new names. So that's great. So I'm all about educating people on a new path for learning new things from new people. So thank you for that. Well, that's the section for the speed round. Now it's my turn to ask you a couple questions, and we're going to go to the expert witness section.
Your Honor, I move to disqualify Ms. Vito as an expert witness.
Can you answer the question?
No, it is a trick question.
So, Dustin, I have a concept. Like, I had a conversation this week with somebody at RSA, and it's a very high-level executive. Like, I want to fix everything. I want my apps to be 100% secure. And I said, there's no such thing as a 100% secure application. There's always risk in the application, and it's just based on what risk you're willing to accept. And there's two variables I always like to throw out there: impact and likelihood. How bad is it, and how likely is it to happen? What's your take when, you know, your executive staff says, I want my applications to be 100% secure?
Well, first of all, if a non-security person asked something like that, I would be very impressed. That would be a major step forward. Wow, cool. You care about security. Fantastic. Let's talk.
Yeah. But I'd also like a flying car, you know. I'd like a flying car.
Exactly. Yeah, I think 100% secure, first of all, is unattainable. I think we all know that attackers are always coming up with new techniques, et cetera. They're creative. We're creative. It's always this kind of push-pull. But I also think you definitely need to take into account the risk level and sort of the business value versus security, right? And, and try to find the middle ground there. Because, you know, perfect security would be unplug your computer and don't do anything at all. You know,
yeah.
And one other way that it was described to me that I just have carried forward with me when I talk about this is, without a business, there would be nothing to secure, right? So focus on making your business succeed first, and match that level of success and risk with security.
Oh, it makes total sense. Well, another question I have for you, Dustin, is, you know, this is something I'm passionate in, and where my career path has gone after 17 years in SaaS, scanning the source code, is the concept of Application Security Posture Management, or ASPM, which is a cool acronym, I think. Have you heard of it? Do you know anything about it? Is it come across your radar just yet?
Yeah, I'm certainly seeing a lot of tools popping up, especially recently, and actually spent a significant amount of time evaluating a handful of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly I've heard of them. I think their focus is really on creating that one complete picture, kind of what I was alluding to before for the security.
That's where I was going with it. Yep, yep.
Yeah, but also potentially for the engineering org as well to understand, you know, all of the findings across the environment in context, you know, and helping to merge the results from various tools and just kind of be that central dashboard and central reporting mechanism and go to get an understanding of your security maturity.
Yeah. And the way I look at it is a lot of the star AST scanning solutions out there are all looking at one specific slice of the perpetual pizza that is an application. You know, you're looking at the source code or the running application or the software, the open source packages or the APIs. It's about how do you put context around how all those work in unison, not just looking at it from one slice, but does that slice, you know, have a blast radius that could basically cause issues with other areas that you're not even looking at?
Yep, certainly. Yeah, I think that's some of the context that I'm talking about before. Mm-hmm. And then, like I was saying before, if it's public facing, the business criticality, right? The ability to just go beyond the basics of the findings, mm-hmm. and even relate findings to specific applications or microservices or services, you know, whatever you have in your environment. I think that's really important too. And then ownership is just another big piece that I would like to see more tools focus on in general. You know, I've seen a lot of tools that are, you know, they allow you to create, you know, set up a team and assign folks manually to the applications that are out there and the repos that are out there. But I think a lot of that can be detected automatically. And I think there's room for maturity there and evolution to detect that stuff automatically, right? Using HR systems, using like the last committer for GitHub, you know, and just kind of putting all the pieces together.
Oh, great. And then final question, you mentioned before, and it's something I am very passionate about, but it's a very complicated thing, I think, to do in modern software development life cycles or, you know, DevOps programs is threat modeling. How do you see threat modeling as, it's very important, but how does it work in a modern CI/CD process where people are listening, releasing 10 hundreds of times? That threat model gets old very fast. How do you update that and how would you approach that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest benefits, especially when you start your threat modeling journey, is to, like we were talking about before, combine the knowledge of your engineering org and your security team through those threat modeling exercises. You know, think the old school with the whiteboard. You talk about the systems, security team learns a lot about the systems, the development team learns a lot from security in terms of the stuff that they're thinking about. It's a good first step. It's you know, it's a good way to kind of get people into it and train them. But you're exactly right. How do you scale something like that? Do you have the resources on the security team, et cetera, to do those activities across the entire engineering org all the time? No. And I think there's an opportunity to shift a lot of that toward automation and also toward engineering ownership of it, right? Having them be responsible for updating their data flow diagrams and the architecture diagrams and all of that, maybe based on the precedent that you set during those activities, but they're carrying it forward and security team would be providing the tools, et cetera, to help them with that. I've heard of a lot of great things, you know, that are being created and that are popping up in terms of automating threat models and that kind of stuff. And I definitely think that's the future.
Oh, awesome. And I agree with you 100%. Well, that's the expert witness session. Thank you for, you know, great feedback on all the different areas. And again, we had some new questions. So we're kind of going to mix it up with some questions here as we move forward with the podcast. The next section before the final section is I like to call the social section, the section on tattoos.
Now he's getting a tattoo. Yeah, he's getting ink done. He asked for a 13, but they drew a 31.
So I was at RSA this past week. I know I'll probably date the podcast by saying that, but we're going to go with it. And a lot of people, I do the podcast and the Bionic Uncensored, and people see my posts and they say, I want to see the guy with the tattoos. I want to talk to him. What's your take in the industry about people expressing themselves with, you know, maybe non-standard business look or presence? I see a lot of people out there, and it seems like tattoos and cybersecurity is pretty much like as mandatory as getting swag in a backpack at a conference. What's your take in terms of your day-to-day interaction with development teams, security teams, so on and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, probably where I'd start is that I also have a tattoo myself. So, you know, I'm down with it. And
good.
I think in general, people should be allowed to express themselves. I think we need to focus more on the value that they're bringing, the skills that they have, et cetera. I mean, you could probably say the same thing for work from home.
Yep.
You know, I don't want to necessarily go off on that tangent right now, but, you know, how are people most productive and what do they need to do for themselves personally to be productive, you know? And I think that varies across the board. And I don't think you can create a template and just try to fit everybody into it. I think everybody's unique and they're going to have different ways of expressing themselves. And I think that's completely fine and should be encouraged, frankly.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. And I'm glad, you know, sometimes I don't ask about the tattoos up front. And some people are like, well, I don't have any, but I really want one. And some people are like, I have, you know, I'm covered. So it's just kind of the social aspect. So we're not just talking AppSec all the time. So our last section is closing time.
Closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
So Dustin, this is your chance to, you know, plug something you're interested in. If you're writing a book, if the organization you're interested in, even a charity, you know, something that Dustin's passionate about that you want to share with the audience and gain more kind of exposure for that specific topic. It can be technical, can be personal, can be whatever you want. It's your soapbox to plug whatever you'd like.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity, Matt. So I actually run a meetup group, and we meet every month. It's called Let's Talk Software Security. And one of the reasons I created is because, you know, there's a lot of presentations out there, and presentations are cool, speakers are cool, that's great. But what I thought was missing is a format of, hey, let's just get together and talk. Let's just have a discussion. Let's set a topic and talk about it. You know, show up, share your thoughts, ask some questions, you know, interact, right? That's kind of the whole point of the meetup. So we meet every month. It's a whole lot of fun. We have great turnout. We have a lot of the industry experts showing up regularly. It's just a lot of fun. So if that's your cup of tea, we'd love to see you at some point.
Well, where is it located?
Thanks for prompting me on that. It's a global group. So It's not a local in-person meetup. It's all remote. It's all video call. And we get folks all over the world that join.
And I did notice that you call it software security and not application security.
Exactly.
You call it, let's call it software. So there we go. It's life imitating art there. We did a little foreshadowing totally by accident.
We're starting a trend. Let's do this.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dustin, that's the wrap on the podcast today. I really appreciate your time and taking a little bit of a time out of your busy schedule to chat with us. Really appreciate it. And hopefully you enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Matt, for having me. This was great.
Dustin, thanks for being on the show today. Really liked the conversation and the format. You provided a lot of great information. Tattoos, Code, and Data Flows, please like, subscribe, listen to it on your favorite podcast platform.